Happy New 2009. Day 2.
Alright, let's just get to it. It's 2 o'clock exactly. Get the stragglers if anybody comes. My name is Rob Rohan. I work for demon.com.au. That's not really, it's just demon, but I like to throw the whole URL in there. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about web iPhone development, but I've kind of led you here under false pretenses a little bit, because while we're going to talk a lot about the iPhone, you're actually really writing code for WebKit, and WebKit runs on the iPhone as well as Air as well as Android. We're going to be specifically focusing on the iPhone, but I'm also going to throw in a little bit about Android and where that would come into play. I'm going to do this in about 5 points. The first thing we're going to talk about is, why would you even bother writing an iPhone app? Like, does it even make sense? Or why would you write a iWebKit app? Then we're going to talk about some things to consider, and then I get a rant a little bit about some things that kind of bother me about some web apps that are there out already. We'll talk about some tools, third-party libraries. And the middle part is probably when you guys walk out of here, if you're going to write an iPhone app, is where most of your code is going to be. I mean, this is the stuff you're probably going to use today if you decide to do something like this. And then we're going to go into the built-in stuff, the Darby hackers here part. And that's stuff that is very specific to the iPhone, really cool. And it will probably come out in some of the newer stuff in Chrome and later on down the road for WebKit. But right now, it's specific to the iPhone. And then I'll throw out some tips and tricks that will help you along the way. So first off, why even bother writing an iPhone app? So if you believe the hype, the iPhones are just everywhere and predominant and amazing and cool. And that's not really the case. It's not really actually true. I mean, there's only about 8% of the market as 2006 from these guys. This is from CNN Money in the States, that they have 8% of the market. And while that is a huge number, it really is only 8. So if you're going for a huge mass market, you might not really need to be in this space. However, the name of this article was iPhone sales grew 254% in 2008. So if you're into trends and you want to get in front of stuff, it's probably a really good idea to check this stuff out. Especially with Android coming to market more and more. They're getting more and more phones out there with Cupcake coming out. That number will get bigger and bigger because, again, with the WebKit in so many different things. So I want to write an iPhone, you're set, you're ready to go. Do you write a native one or do you go for the web? So these are some of the things that contrast between writing a native app and doing a web-based one. So WebKit, like we talked about already, supports more platforms. You're writing code that's going to run potentially in several different places depending on how you write it. You have full control of your project. If you write a native app, you're giving your project's control to Apple, saying, I give you veto power at any time for any reason over any part of my app. With this, when you write a web app, you have full control. You can do whatever you want. In the mobile birds of a feather, we talked about porn. You know, some people want to do porn. You can't do porn in an iPhone. On the App Store, you could do porn online, or curse words, or whatever you want to do. Or the iFart, I think was one of the ones. So it doesn't work when connected to the net for a web app, kind of. And we're going to actually talk about in the Darby hackers part that that's not necessarily true. But for the most part, you can't have offline apps in a web app. You also can't do stuff like geolocation, and you can't get access to the camera and upload files and some of those kind of things. And video games. And again, with Darby hackers, that's not totally true, but if you're doing video games, you're really going to want to do an iPhone app. I figure you guys aren't doing video games. So then we look at, okay, so you're going to do a web app. It's going to be on the iPhone. Or you're going to do a web app. You've decided, forget native, you're going to do a web. Should you even go to the point of making a special UI, like Dig? When you go to Dig, you can do an iPhone app. Or when you go to like news.google.com, which we'll talk about in a little while, you get a special listing. Should you even do that? Or should you just use what's already there? Because a lot of your applications, especially if you write them correctly, look fantastic in the iPhone, so you don't have to actually do anything. And we'll talk about a little bit of tips and tricks to make your sites look even better and not have to actually write a special UI. Because you know you're going to get the CEO guy who paid you to pay for the app. He's like, please write me a website. You go and you spend all this time, and he goes, I looked at it on my iPhone, it looks like crap. You're like, dude, it has nothing to do with that. So you know you're going to get those people. So you at least want to check it. And then we get to test. So even if you write really standards compliant stuff, you really need to check, because we even had a site that we did for AOC, and the background looked fantastic in the browser, looked great in Safari, looked great everywhere we checked it, but as soon as we checked it in the iPhone, the background was messed up. So you really need to test, even if you don't think you have to, even if you stick to standards. Okay, now we're going to talk about some things to consider. These are kind of like do's and don'ts. You may have thought of these things, you may have not thought of these things. So the first thing, when you're providing an iPhone app, you want a concise display. You want to take whatever information you're displaying to people and make it smaller, obviously. That's what you're going for. But you got to keep that in mind when you're writing the app, because I've seen some iPhone apps where people just throw the entire UI of all the information in the thing. You want just a limited amount of data. What's the most important thing that the people need at that time? Wrap the areas with divs or whatever, because you'll notice when you double tap an iPhone, if you guys, I assume, how many of you have iPhones or iPod touches? Pretty much, and I assume everybody's played with one at least. You know, when you double tap on the browser and it zooms in, you want to have those things wrapped correctly so the zoom will automatically pick up where the divs are. So you want to make sure you have, you know, blog posts, and each individual blog is kind of its own separate thing, not just kind of spaghetti soup or tag soup. Now, sprite maps and Doom tiles is something I made up, so you probably never heard of it. But sprite maps, you might have. And if you look at like YouTube, this is a good example. You want to download one big file with all your images in it, and then using CSS position it. So you have, you know, certain blocks mapped out for the graphics on one large file, and using like 4% over, 2% down to actually display the graphic. The reason you want to do this is because on cellular networks, when you do requests for files, it has to go in a lot of different ways, more than on the internet. You know, you're going over cell towers to other points. So you want to limit as many file requests as possible. And you don't want to force areas to 320 by, or greater than 320 or greater than 480, which is the landscape or, you know, the portrait version of the iPhone. And I'm sure some of you have been to sites where you double tap something and it kind of doesn't really zoom in, and you still can't read it. You got to flip it sideways, and you still can't really read it. Blog CFC, if anybody's seen that, is a prime example of not to do that. Okay, so here's the two pet peeves of mine. Just because you're going to go out and you're going to write these cool apps, and I don't want you to do these things because they bother me, and I have the microphone. So this is news.google.com. This is one of my favorite apps, news.google.com.au. News.google.com. I love this interface. This interface is fantastic on the iPhone. You double-click things, you zoom in, you can zoom out, you can flip it sideways, you can scroll around. It's awesome. I love it. Unfortunately, they decided to make their own special user interface for this, and I hate it. It makes the user interface worse to me, because now you have these really concise things. You don't get the zoom out, zoom in. You can't browse the page really easily in one look. It's just this list of things. So they've actually made it worse. But the worst part about it, to me, and I don't mean to bash Google, I apologize if anybody is from Google, you can get out by scrolling down here and clicking Classic Menu. And the problem with this is that it doesn't remember. So for me specifically, I want to go look at news.google.com. It loads up a UI I don't like. Then I have to scroll all the way down and click Classic. So I have to load the page twice effectively to get to the information. And that just actually, it makes it worse. And I don't use news.google.com on my phone because of this. So allow your users a way to not go into your iPhone app or your special phone app, I guess. So this is another one, know your audience's needs. This is, again, Google, only because I love you, Google. I'm sorry, don't mean to bash you. I'm studying Chinese, and there's no like way to practice sentence structures in Chinese. So I come here all the time, and I type in Chinese, and I hit translate to see if I even got somewhat close to the right character. So Google, again, made this special iPhone version of it, and it's fantastic. It's beautiful. It's perfect. It condenses all the information. It has everything that would make it a great UI. Unfortunately, for some reason, they took Chinese out, because Android doesn't do Chinese input. So they've removed features and made the app, again, not usable for me. So it becomes a useless application. So you don't want to And I mean, I'm not the major audience of Google, obviously. I mean, I'm sure this is fine for many people, but it's severely limited. And then this one doesn't have a way to go back to the other app. So I can't default back to the normal application. So always allow a way out, and don't make it worse. And that's hard to know, and it's kind of arbitrary. But you need to test and make sure that you're providing your users with what they want. OK, so now we're going to get to the crux of it for all the developer guys. Tools and third-party libraries. All right, so Dashcode. This is the Apple way of doing it. And it's pretty good. And we'll talk about why you may want to use it and why you may not want to use it. It comes with developer tools. You're going to want to go to, and I'll give you the links later, but it's like developer.apple.com/iPhone. And you download the actual Xcode program, the one that you use to write native apps. And it comes with two things. The first is Dashcode, which you may know from widgets. And the second is the iPhone simulator. And you're going to need both of those things to do any kind of app development. So you're going to need these tools anyway. But we'll just show you Dashcode. And an example of this is cn.robrohan.com, which I'll show you in a minute. So, but first, I'll give you a really quick walkthrough of Dashcode, because you can download it and give it a good try yourself. You don't really need me around for that. Okay. So the one thing that Dashcode is really fantastic for is doing really quick and dirty UIs. So if you want to add a bullet point to websites that you develop for other people, and you want to say, and I'll make you an iPhone app on top of this, that'll be, you know, however much money extra. It's real simple to do. So you may know from dashboard widgets to get Dashcode, you have a second option up there at the top for web applications. So I'm just going to pick an RSS reader. And more or less, that's it. All I have to do is come into this RSS properties, and hopefully the internet, this is the part that's going to be fun. And this is just Fools of Goog, which is a daemon product. It's just an aggregator of blog posts. I'm just going to click run. And if the internets are all good today, which they haven't been, there. That's it. So, I mean, you have a functioning, fully functioning iPhone app. You're done. That's it. But, you know, it doesn't look good. You can give this to a designer. A designer can go through and use Dashcode to make it look pretty. Oops, didn't mean to totally quick Dashcode. And so this is that cn.robrohan.com one, where you can click stuff. It's, you know, like WYSIWYG, very Dreamweaver-esque. You just drag and drop. It has a parts library. Where you can add in buttons, and you know, it has a very Flash kind of feel to it. It's very easy to use, and it's definitely worth a look. One more thing, it has like the stack layout here, so you define views, kind of like if you ever use Flex, and you shift the views back and forth. The one problem with Dashcode is it's its own thing. You can't really integrate it into something, so I'm sure a lot of you already use Drupal or Far Cry or some other CMS or something, and you may want to add an additional front end for that, and this is not going to help you. This is more, well, it will. It's kind of hard to say. But it's all like bundled into one thing. It has a debugger. It has a lot of really great tools, like, let me show you the resource log, the performance monitor. So you can actually run this, and it will give you an estimate of how much CPU and memory your app is using. You can see a resource log to see it making AJAX requests. So you really can get deep into this. It has a step debugger and all kinds of really neat stuff, but it's definitely separate. You can't take Dashcode code and throw it into your view of some other app. And so this is the output. And as you can see, this is an Android phone and a iPhone, obviously. And they look pretty similar. And they react pretty similar as well. So just even using Apple's own tool, but if you really look close, you can't really see it, I guess. But some of the icons don't look as good on the Android phone because Apple has special things that they do. And if you were to click the actual title, when it shifts sideways, the Apple title bar one stays still like this, and the Android one, the whole screen shifts. So there's a little bit of difference. But still, even using Apple's own tools, you can target both devices and any other ones that come out. Okay, so we're going to talk about iWebKit. This is an extremely easy way to just throw something together. If you have something going, I mean, you could just, this is straight up HTML. You include a CSS file, and that's it. It's normal markup. You just put it in any view code, and you have an iPhone. This is actually what we used for the web.com.au iPhone app, if you want to look at that. And it's really simple. It supports full screen and pop-up menus, which no other ones do. You know, like when you hit the plus sign, you get that little thing that slides up. And no other web apps do that natively. And again, it's just standard HTML and CSS. Let me just show you that. So here it is in Android since it loaded first. You can see it's really simple, but you'll notice that the page refreshes. You can see the page refresh. It doesn't respond very well. There's no transitions, but it does look correct. And again, this is if you're going for that, I want that native iPhone look and feel. And, I mean, it does respond, and it's not bad. If we look at it in the iPhone, we get the same sort of experience of you get the browser refresh. It goes to another page. So for quick and dirty stuff, like for our agenda, we decided to do this in like 2 hours. We just put it out. It was not hard at all. It's just including a couple files. Can't seem to operate Keynote correctly. Apologies. So the next one is IUI. IUI is better than iWebKit in its look and feel and in its functionality, but it is a little more complicated. You can't just throw it out there. You couldn't do it in 2 hours. It would take a while. It uses JSON to request the next screen and bring it in, but it does have sliding transitions, and it feels a little bit better. The code, by the way, I should have mentioned that on the other one, on the iWebKit is GPL, if that matters to you, or LGPL. If that matters to you, and this one is MIT, so if you're doing, or it's MIT-like, it's not really MIT, but if you're into open source versus proprietary, that may influence you. And again, so it's more Ajaxy than WebKit, and then Gluey Notes is an example, and I should also tell you that I'm going to give you all the code that I'm going to show you online so you can dig through it, because in general, I find it's better to actually dig through code to discover things. My hope is that when you leave here, you have a little bit more of a general way to go. And I'll just show you Gluey Notes, what it looks like, so you can get a feel for what that looks like. I'll just show you the iPhone. One thing they added, which I don't like, is now you guys are all going to know my password. So that's all right. I'm giving you the code so you can probably find a security vulnerability or something in there anyway. So we got already the little loader, which is nice. And then when you click something, it actually, after a long delay because of the internet here, it does go. Let me go back to a different one that has something better. And the one thing that IUI does that's really nice is if you've ever gone to news.com.au and used their web app, when you hit the back button, it actually takes you too far back. It takes you out of their application. So it goes in the history. With IUI, it will actually take you back. So that's a really nice bit. And also you can do things like when you add to the home screen, it does a little icon. Same thing with iWebKit, actually. And I think that's about the end of the libraries, and we're going to get into the crazy stuff here. So these are some other ones that you guys can check out on your own. Google Web Toolkit, actually, you can target it to an iPhone. I haven't used that, but I was reading on the website that you could do it. jQuery has a plugin that you can use. jQuery is in beta, I believe, but it's still worth a look because jQuery is pretty cool. Sapphire is another one. And then there's Sprout Core, which doesn't target iPhone, but the only reason I put it up here is because Apple used it to write Mobile Me, and if they wrote it to a Mobile Me, I'm fairly positive in the future this will become the way to do it. Cocoa for the web is what it's called. And some design tools here for all the designers, since everybody's supposed to design before you code. iPhone GUI PSD for all you Photoshop people who like to do Photoshop. You can throw, it's just a bunch of layers that you can put stuff together and take snapshots. And this one is actually my favorite here, Yahoo Stencil Kit. Yahoo does some really cool stuff with this. If you guys are into any kind of management or designing, it's really nice. This has OmniGraffle, which is that, Visio. There's PDF and PNGs and SVGs for a whole bunch of different kinds of mock-up stuff. All right. What's up? All right, so now we're going to get into the crazy, gnarly, weird stuff that you will never use, but you could use, and it would be really neat because you can do some amazing stuff with the iPhone that nobody is doing yet, and you could really set yourself apart if you're committed to going with the iPhone. We're still just going to be talking about normal HTML, CSS, and JS stuff, so there's not going to be anything really new here. It's just building on concepts you already know. We're going to talk about how to support touch events, so you can do pinching and moving and gestures with your fingers, which, again, you know, you can't do that on a normal phone. You can't do it in a browser. There's some new DOM events we'll talk about. Now, everything we talk about is proposed in the W3C for CSS 3, so you're not wasting your time learning this stuff, but it's not in the spec yet. So everything is prefixed with a dash WebKit to indicate that it's not okay. It's not kosher to use it for anything other than WebKit. But it is WebKit, not Safari, so it might work in Google Chrome later, it might work in some of these other things. And what you can do with this is do hardware-accelerated transitions, hardware-accelerated transforms, and it really rivals Flash with the stuff that you can do with divs. And it's very cool, so let's start talking about it. First of all, touch events. On any DOM object, anywhere, you can do onTouch start, onTouch move, onTouch end, and onTouch cancel. onTouch cancel is exactly like onTouch end, except if like a phone call comes in, you might not want to actually do the event that the user was doing. And what these are is they're just normal events that you can get to. With the event.targetTouches, it's just an array of the number of fingers and what they're doing. There's stuff, PageX, target, identifier, so you can get a unique identifier for each finger that's on the phone. There's client X and client Y. And then the event.touches are all the things. So event.targetTouches is if I put my finger on a div, that would be in the event.targetTouches. If I had one finger on the div and one finger off the div, they would all be in event.touches, but they wouldn't be in event.targetTouches. So only the one that was in the div would be in target, but they would both be in the event.touches. That makes sense. So CSS transforms. This is just standard transforms, or I mean standard CSS. Dash WebKit dash transform. You can do translate, rotate, scale, skew. So you can take a div and you can actually rotate it, you can spin it, you can skew it. And these are just normal properties that you would set. So dash WebKit dash transform colon rotate angle 150 degrees. And WebKit transform origin, you can take a div and change the origin from the middle so you can rotate it in the middle or up on a corner and rotate it on the corner. So this is kind of an example of what it looks like. WebKit transform, translate from 400 to 200, rotate 135 degrees and scale by 2. And then this is how you would do it in JavaScript. You can also do it a more proper way by having class names and doing class.name and assigning it. So just to give you a quick look of what this kind of looks like. Android out of here. Okay, so this is just a standard div HTML. As you can see by the code, it's just HTML, CSS. When I click it, it actually rotates. Like, there's nothing you can really do that with in anything except for like the canvas. This is just pure HTML. So we could look at it really fast. Just to show you. So here we have the div defined, and all it has is a flip event, or an onClick flip. The onClick just changes the class name from card to card flipped, and the CSS is card defined as like normal CSS, as you would already know. And then you have WebKit transform style perspective, transform WebKit, transform duration. And then when you add the additional flipped, it actually rotates it on the y-axis by 180 degrees. So that's like no code. It's like four things, and it's all stuff you already know, which is pretty cool. It just, you know, that it's only tied to the iPhone is a little bit of a bad thing, but I don't think it'll stay that way. All right, so transitions, which we kind of looked at a little bit. We have you set the duration. You can set the translate. So this would obviously translate something on the x-axis after 2 seconds. There's also keyframes. So this is defining with this little at symbol. It's saying that I'm defining an animation, and the animation will start at 0%, opacity 1, 95% opacity 1, and then at 100% it'll start fading away. I'm not going to show it right now, but it'll be in the downloads that I show later. There's this Leaf demo that shows you how to do that. And this Leaf demo one will show you the difference between doing it JavaScript way by setting X, you know, top and left to make things fall, and by using this transitions, they get a nice little wave back and forth. And if we have time, I'll show you here. But I want to show you a cooler one. So putting this all together, this is an example of some of the stuff. This is an example of one of the ones that was just, it kind of blew me away when I first saw it. Then this puts everything together, the touches, and this actually does the 3D transform. There is a transform 2D matrices. You can do all kinds, or 4D, 4x4 matrices, and do stuff in 3D. And this is also in the... in the code that I'll give you. So you notice at the top, it actually kind of fades back. It pulls the image. These are all divs. This is all just HTML. There's nothing going on here but HTML, CSS, and doing touch events. And on the phone, it doesn't work quite well in this emulator, but if you roll it, it'll roll, and it has like the feeling of, you know, like an index or something. And I don't know, it's pretty wicked. So I'll just show you the HTML for it really quick, because it's kind of funny. All it is just a bunch of divs. That's it. Caramba. One of these days, I swear I'll learn Keynote. Over. I just want the presenter display, but it won't go over there. All right. So getting back to that thing I talked about not being able to go offline, it's not totally true. There's a database built into Safari, or WebKit. It's built into Safari on the desktop as well. In Safari 4, you can actually view the databases and write queries against them in the browser if you enable the debug mode. Now, the database was part of the HTML5 spec, but as I learned in the WSG, if any of you guys are from Sydney, by the way, the WSG happens at the Australian Museum. It is very fun. You learn a lot of cool stuff. Very neat. But we just learned 2 weeks ago that they pulled it out of HTML5. So while I could say to you, hey, it's great, learn it because it's part of a spec, It's now not really part of HTML5. So again, this you're getting into territory where you're very specific to the iPhone. But it is still part of another spec, though, so it's not totally a waste of time. Anyway, only in Safari. It might be in Chrome. I'm not totally sure. Debug on databases. It's all just SQL Lite under the hood. So if you're targeting an AIR application and an iPhone application, you're still using the same kind of query. And it's all based on asynchronous transfers. So if you've ever done HTML, HTTP request stuff, it's the similar kind of thing. This is what it kind of looks like. It looks kind of gobbledygooky, but we open up a database, we begin a transaction, and then we create a database by passing in an SQL statement. The little brackets at the end, that array is for like adding parameters, you know, like prepared statements. I don't know if you store procedures, you know, add the question mark in there. And then the populate DB is the callback. So you're waterfalling the queries together to make it do stuff. And here's a select statement example. We're just selecting name from things. Again, we're not passing in any arguments. Show things, you can see we're iterating over results.row.length, and then the name of the field gets pulled into the, it's an associative array, so you can just call it name because you called it from name in the select. This is a great example of a good database example where they show you these sticky notes. They show you everything, all the CRUD operations. This is written against WebKit, but it will work against iPhone as well. All right, so that's like the front loading stuff. The rest of this stuff is just little tips and tricks, little things you can do. Don't use document.write or enter HTML. It's really bad. It's not very good performance. It doesn't work very well. It works better on the iPhone than it does on a lot of other platforms, but it's slow, and there's better ways to do it. Use the DOM. The DOM is optimized, and it's better to do that. Viewport, if you look at almost anything that supports iPhone, this is how you can kind of control with the default zoom level when someone first comes to your page and you want it to be, you know, zoomed in really close. So if you had like a blog or something, you had like a lot of news things on the side, you could zoom it in closer and they could have to pull back to see those other items, you know what I mean, to start out the viewport. And this is another cool thing that not a lot of people know about, but this is a standard as well. With the includes here, with the link media equals, most people just do screen and print, which is cool, but you can also do select statements. There's a whole query language that goes along with this, and this is a standard as well. So it's going to apply this specific style sheet only where the screen and the max device width is 480. So this is how Gluey Notes works. So it works in both iPhone and Android because it's not saying, you know, it's not switching on the user agent. It's just saying if the device can support this size, then apply this style sheet. Otherwise, apply a different style sheet, maybe one for screen. Here's another one, callback orientation. So if you want to know when someone flips the phone sideways, you can assign this callback here. You get a little callback. Then you can do window.orientation to know the level. Yeah, it's 0 is portrait, 90 is landscape, negative 90 is clockwise, 180 is upside down, or counterclockwise, I mean, and then 180 is upside down. The input autocorrect off is really important because if you have like those little things that suggest things, like Google auto-suggest, or if you have special input, you want to turn that off. You don't want to have their suggestions overriding your own suggestions. This is how you do the touching stuff, a little example of doing untouch start, untouch move, and untouch end. But also, you want to do event prevent default because the way the iPhone works, you know, if you throw your finger down, it pulls the screen up and down. This will make that stop. Window.open database to know if the database actually exists. And this is just a simple PHP little bit to know what device is coming in. So you can switch on iPhone, Android, or iPod. And this is the end. Play me off again. So it's a fail cat. Thank you. This is the top part is where you want to go to get all the Apple tools and everything that you're going to want to know about Apple specific stuff and to register and do all that stuff. You want to go to the top one. The bottom one you can go to get all the code, the source code that I showed today, the source code I didn't even show today, and the presentation will be up there in a little while. So thank you very much, everybody. Chris, thank you. If you guys have any questions, Twitter.com, Rob Rohan, and also RobRohan@gmail.com if you have any questions. You could also comment on that page, and I'll get back to you. But if anybody has any comments or questions now. Yeah? What kind of system is? Yeah, I mean, the user always has the ability to delete it, but it's always there. It's a 5 megabyte limit, I think, if I didn't say that before. Yeah. Totally. You could use it for stuff like downloading full documents, having them work on like a blog post or something and putting it back. But five megabytes is a decent amount, but not a lot to do like an entire application offline. It's good for like pulling data storage off, working with stuff, and then syncing it back. Also, Google Gears, I think, is similar. Yeah. Can you get to the latitude and longitude of an iPhone in the web app? No, but if you do a native app, you can stick an just a browser as the only thing in the app, and then call in your thing. You can get hooks in and out of JavaScript that way. The only problem you'll run into is Apple will probably veto you. So no, not at this point. At least not that I know of. It would depend a lot on the screen, on the screen size. And what you could do, though, is with that viewport tag, if it supported, well, it would be because it would be WebKit, you could actually zoom in and out the viewport to actually pull it back. You can also do a different style sheet with CSS. With the dash code thing, probably not. But with the other ones, you could. You could tweak it a little bit. Yeah, it sucks because they're the easiest to implement, and you have the most control over it, but you're down to coding it yourself. I mean, you don't have like this really pretty GUI. Well, so it doesn't really suck. Yeah. Why will Apple veto you? Well, you're actually running the risk of Apple vetoing you, I should say. At the Birds of a Feather the other day, someone said that they had tried to do something very similar to what he suggested, and they got shot down. They had numerous APIs. They had one to like get to the contact list and get to all these things. So it was like just a wrapper to be able to get to other iPhone things, and that got shot down. Why? Because who knows? Yeah. When you get shot down by Apple for the native store, they don't really tell you much. They just, yeah. Cool. Y'all good? All right. Cool. Thank you guys very much for coming. I appreciate it.